How's it going, everybody? My name is Greg Knox, and these are the worst date movies ever. I am very, very happy to be joined on this special episode of the show by someone who's not been on the show for a while. It's Tom Cannon.
Hi, Greg. It's good to be back. I think I haven't been on the show for ages, years.
Yeah, God, if it's not years, it feels like years, definitely, because it's that time, everybody.
Yes.
So I wanted to bring Tom on the show because he's been on to talk about Human Centipede, ABCs of Death, and Zoo on the last series. I think that's the last time I had you on the show.
I think so.
But I wanted to bring Tom on the show to talk about a film that you actually like for a change.
You mentioning all those films made me realize, I mean, I have some sort, I was going to say personal connection to all those films. That sounds very, very dodgy.
Personal connection to the ABCs of
connection
death.
Connection to Zoo. grew up on a farm. No, I have a personal connection to all of them in that, oh, apart from Zoo, actually, but the other ones, Human Centipede, we can say we were there the cinema for the first ever showing of that film, at least in the UK. I don't know if it was the world premiere. But
I don't think it was the world premiere. I could be wrong.
It was certainly the British premiere of that. And ABCs of Death, I saw Fright Fest as well. And Saw, as I'm sure we'll get into in a little bit, again, has a real personal connection to me. It always came out during Halloween. My birthday's around that time. And I would always make it a point to watch them in the cinema. So
it is a ritual.
Even to the point, as like with many rituals, even if you don't enjoy them, you still just keep doing them anyway.
Like many films. What was it they say that it's toxic? Is that the word I'm thinking of?
toxic relationship with Saw.
Really is in a lot of ways. You could say that about a lot of franchises, is that, you know, at the start you're having a good time, and then as things go on, it's like, well, it could get better, and then it doesn't, and then it just gets
I feel
worse.
Like that's like, I'm gonna mention this I'm sure later on as well, but it's like the Star Wars fan base that's very toxic now, because you can't make, people are just not happy with what's, you know, been produced. They always have better ideas of, but they will still watch it, won't they? Like, people will go
to
the cinema. They hate watch stuff. And I wouldn't say I ever got to the point that I hate watched Saw. It was more of a habit to watch it. And as we're speaking,
like a drug habit.
Yeah, I was I should be in one of the traps.
Yeah,
clearly. I've not seen the most recent one. But that blows my mind, though, when I heard that there was a new Saw film and it had Samuel L. Jackson and Chris Rock in. I thought it was a joke.
Yeah, I know. It's mental, isn't it? That became one of those things where people are like, is this for real? What? Saw 9?
Yeah.
And it's Chris Rock wants to do it, and he's written it, co-written it, I suppose. I think is. Yeah, I know.
It's got more star power than any of the other Saw films put together.
Making fun of Cary Elwes and Danny Glover. No, I get what you mean. No, Samuel L. Jackson, much, much bigger star than either of them, with all due respect to those gentlemen.
So I really do want to see the new one, just for the sake of saying that I've completed the set.
Excellent, excellent stuff. So we're going to talk about that in a sec. So you're going to be wondering, if you're a regular listener to the show, Saw, that's not a bad date movie. What the fuck are you talking about? And I completely agree with you. Saw is not a bad date movie at all. I wanted to do this show for a couple of reasons. First of all, like we've already mentioned, there is a brand new Saw movie coming out in cinemas. In fact, it's actually out in cinemas right now, if you're in a part of the world that has cinemas open, like we do.
Woohoo!
Exactly. This is one of the only good things about living in the UK, is for that reason alone. Also, me and Tom, both big fans of the Saw franchise, so I thought it'd be a little bit of fun to talk about. But also, the main reason that I wanted to talk about is because Saw was released by Lionsgate. And Lionsgate released some of the most well-known horror films from the 2000s. And on the next three shows, I'm going to be talking about three of their most well-known mid-2000s films. So this being obviously the first one, Saw. So yeah, if you're a big fan of the Saw franchise, you know, you've got a couple of hours or so of myself and Tom talking about Saw. So yeah, obviously you have that to look forward to. At this point, I should say, look, it's Saw. You kind of know what you're getting into. It's not a disturbing film, is
no.
it?
No. And in fact, I was going to ask you, is Saw to blame? Because a lot of people would say, oh, Saw is one of those films that's to blame for the explosion of torture porn. What blame do you put on Saw's shoulders?
Well, you'll have to listen to the show and find out. But I would say it's to blame, but it's not its fault.
Okay, interesting.
It's one of these things, it didn't mean to do it, but it just happened that way. Okay. It's like the guy who like probably created AIDS or the Ebola virus. It's right. They didn't know what they were doing. It just happened that way. Can't believe I've made that comparison on this show.
Watching Saw is like creating AIDS. You're absolute. That's the tagline for this episode.
Awesome. No disturbing content in the film itself, although maybe disturbing content in this intro by myself. There will be many spoilers. So while, as I always say in these intros, we're not going to be talking about every scene in the film from start to finish in umpty-frumpty detail for 2 hours, there are going to be a lot of spoilers for not just Saw, but in fact all the films in the series, bar the new one, because me and Tom haven't seen it.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're worried about spoilers for Saw 5 at this stage, I mean, you need to sort yourself out.
Indeed. And on that note, talking about sorting ourselves out, let's get on with the show. So when was the first time that you actually saw Saw?
I think Saw has a really personal connection to me. I know that sounds sort of a bit overblown for a film like Saw, but I have incredibly vivid memory of seeing the first film. I was at university, I think final year, and my recollection of it, and this could be sort of rose-tinted spectacles, but I must have heard about the film somehow. Maybe I'd read about it in Empire magazine or something like that. But I'd heard about the film. I didn't really know anything about it. But I think the concept that it was sold on was two men are locked in a room and they must saw their legs off or whatever to escape. And I thought, how do you make a film, like an hour and a half film, out of that? So I remember going to the cinema, no expectations of the film whatsoever. You know, this is a completely new franchise. Well, of course, at the time we didn't know it was a franchise, but had no expectations at all. And watching the film, just completely like going in cold, and then the ending, which of course we'll get to later, but yeah. Just... I'll tell you now, there was a reaction in the cinema towards the end of the film that I have never experienced before or since while watching that.
What was the reaction?
Do you want me to say?
Yeah, okay. Sure.
I think, do you know, stereotypically, when you think about American cinemas, you see like throwing people going crazy. USA. Yeah. It was as close to that as I've ever experienced in the UK. So right at the end where Jigsaw stands up, I promise you this is true. The audience, everyone started cheering and going crazy because like the twist of him like not being dead and just standing up, people were going absolutely crazy. And then when he closes the door at the end and says, "Oh, game's over," like people were just absolutely losing their minds. And I've never experienced that before or since at a cinema, this collective sort of explosion of feeling.
Which cinema was this?
So this was in Nottingham. So maybe that was why. People in Nottingham are starved for culture. And Saw was the big thing at the time.
Maybe that's what it is. Yeah. I've never watched a film in Nottingham.
No, well, you've missed out.
I can't imagine they would be doing that at the West End.
I don't know, because you've got to remember, I guess, that we're looking back on this, right? With years of, I mean, you know, 9-10 films, whatever, deep now into the Saw franchise. But at the time, this was a very much unknown horror film. Or, in fact, I'll say I don't really think, to some extent, it really is a full-blown horror film. But it was a completely unknown sort of entity at the time. And I think, I'm going to say this right now, I think it is the best twist of any independent horror / thriller film ever. That's my opinion.
Wow. That's... Yeah.
And I'd like to hear someone else give me a different example that's better than that.
Yeah, it's hard to... you might be right. I mean, I can't really think of any off the top of my mind. I mean, there's Sixth Sense...
And that was, that was the other one that came to mind when I was thinking about this. But, and that is a great twist, absolutely. But I suppose I watch Sixth Sense at home, you know, a DVD release or whatever. But this I saw in the cinema first week or second week. There was no expectation of anything. And I think a lot of people built up the Sixth Sense because they would say, oh, the twist is amazing. You'll never see it coming. And when you've got that expectation, you kind of are looking for clues.
Yeah.
But for me, this was completely unexpected.
Yeah, that's true. When I saw The Sixth Sense, I already knew the twist because it was just that ingrained. It took me a long time before I watched it. I kind of already knew what the twist was. So,
do you think that it diminished your enjoyment of the film at all?
Yeah, because I already knew what it was. So it's like, yeah, it's hard to, it's not the same, is it?
Well, yeah, I guess this is two things I was thinking about that I was going to ask you. Firstly, do you think a film that has a big twist, is that a major part of the enjoyment of the film? And secondly, is it important within the body of the film that they give you hints that you can work out the twist? Otherwise, if it's just a twist for the sake of a twist, is that bad?
You know, it's interesting. As you know, one of my favourite types of film is the giallo.
Yes.
And the giallo, they're murder mystery films. So the mystery part is actually quite important.
Mm.
And I've seen examples of both. I've seen examples where the mystery, the director and writer, they play fair and they kind of give you enough information to kind of work out in hindsight what the twist is. My number one example of this is Deep Red by Dario Argento. It is totally fair. There's a certain thing that happens in the film, won't spoil what it is, but if you go back and watch the film again, yep, that thing's there. Right. You're just, it's not in plain sight, if that makes sense. With this again, might as well talk about the twist element of it now while we're talking about twists. I'm not one of these people, when I watch a film, I don't watch it with my analytical part of my brain on. I don't tend to get on well with people who do that, where they're watching a film and they're like, well, that couldn't happen. Well, that's not realistic. I mean, what about this? No, I just, all that shit is just not in my head when I watch a film. So when I saw it, in slightly different circumstances to you. I saw it at a friend's house, and this was in the part of my life when I wasn't watching films that much. And I knew of Saw, but I'd never seen it. So I had no idea what to expect. Same but as you.
Did they prepare you, so to speak? Did they say, oh, you should watch this, the ending is great? Or was it completely cold?
I think it was completely cold. I think it was just a film that they wanted to watch and they put it on and we watched it. And then, yeah.
I think that's the best way, right? It's exactly. Annoying when people say to you, if someone says to you, oh, you're going to enjoy this, you'll never guess the ending. Straight away, for me, I'm on high alert for the whole film. I'm watching for any little detail. It takes you out of the film.
The only film where that happened with me, but it didn't ruin my enjoyment, was Sleepaway Camp.
Well, no one, unless you're an actual psychopath, you literally would not be able to guess the ending.
Yeah, because the ending of that film, I'm not going to say what it is, but it's so out of the blue that even in a rewatch, it kind of, you're like, all right, okay, this is a bit weird. So that was a total opposite experience. Sort of to Saw. I should say, again, for the record, one of my favourite films of all time is The Usual Suspects, which again has a twist that everyone kind of knows. And it's also a film, and this is the thing with twisty films, where there's your first watch where you don't know what the twist is, in theory. The twist happens, you're like, oh my God. And then you watch it again, and then now that you know what the twist is your enjoyment of the film reduced?
Yes, I know what you mean. Like, yeah, can you enjoy it more because now you're looking for those clues that the filmmakers put in there? And I'd say with Saw, having now going back to watching it, I watched it today, and this was the first time that I'd watched it since what year was it? 2000.
So it came out in 2004.
So I've not seen it for 17 years or 16 and a half years. Right. So I, of course, remembered, you know, I remembered what the twist was, but I think I enjoyed it. I had a greater appreciation for the film, I suppose, now that I've seen all the other ones. And I'll put my hand up, I am a card-carrying member of the Saw fan club.
Hence why you're doing this show.
Hence why I'm doing this show. I've seen every single one of the Saw films, barring the new one, which I will be getting around to watching. I want to watch it in the cinema because I've seen all of the other ones in the cinema except for number two.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Not many people can say that. And those that can are in some sort of institute. I have a much greater appreciation of this because I think in hindsight, now I've watched all of them, my view of what Saw is compared to what the original one was is very different, if that makes sense. Because I'm sure we'll get to this, but they've changed quite a lot.
Yes. In some ways and less so in others, again, as we'll go into. Have you seen the short film of Saw?
The one that they made prior to the original?
Yes. So,
no, I've not.
I should explain. So Saw, as I mentioned, so it came out in 2004. It was directed by James Wan, who I'm going to talk about in a little bit in a sec. Written and starring Lee Whannell, both from Australia. Basically, the brief history of Saw, just for those of you who don't know, I imagine everyone probably listening to this knows, but in case you don't, so they're both from Australia. Obviously, at that point, you know, Australian horror wasn't really a thing. I suppose one of the films that kind of happened sort of as a result of Saw is Wolf Creek. It's another Australian horror film, but you know, pre that was obviously a very different time. They had this idea and a script for a film, weren't really getting the joy in making it in Australia, so their agent said, why don't you try pitching this to people in America? So they went to LA, and they met the guys at Twisted Pictures, who obviously they produced all the films, and then the rest is history. They basically what they wanted, from what I understand, is James Wan, he was like, look, I want to direct this. Lee Whannell wanted to star in it as well, and then this is one of the joys of the film, is that basically the producers let them do it.
So the thing now that I'm going back and watching is, do you think they knew from the first one? Because they set up so much of the world. You've got Jigsaw, you've got the puppet.
Yeah,
you've
this got, is world, put my teeth in, world building.
Yes, do you think the they film. Knew? Could they have imagined in their wildest dreams that Saw 3D would ever be a thing? Like, it was so open to a sequel, right? I can't believe that this was meant to be a one-off.
It's weird. There's a couple of things in the film that aren't explained, which are explained in the sequels. So it's possible they kind of left them in, not intending them to be sort of something that would be explained later on, or maybe it was because I should also explain that One of the things that's interesting about this film, I realize I haven't actually explained where the short film came on. So basically to pitch Saw, because they had put a certain amount of money together, Lee Whannell and James Wan decided to make a short film, which is essentially about sort of 9 minutes long and is the reverse bear trap scene, essentially, the film itself, but it with Lee Whannell playing the Amanda character, essentially. So it's him. But how the scene plays out in the feature-length film is very, very similar to the short film, except it's not Tobin Bell.
Yeah.
And him not being there to do the voiceover is very noticeable.
So they just don't have any voiceover?
They have voiceover, but it's a different person. Okay. So Tobin Bell and Cary Elwes and Danny Glover, they weren't obviously not involved. They joined based on the strength of the short film and the script.
And I think this is very... I'm very well that I'm one of these people. I like what they call your high concept.
You do.
Yes. And this, I think that's why I was drawn to this originally, because it's a high concept film. Two men locked in a room. Here's a saw. You've got to escape. And that was the purity, if I can use that phrase, of the first film. And I think as the franchise goes on, that is diluted massively, and it becomes trap after trap after trap. Can we top this? Like, what's the next crazy torture porn, basically? Yeah. Isn't it?
No, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I was going to mention this. So I think what takes a lot of people by surprise, and to kind of not directly quote any reviews, well, actually, I might be able to do that, actually, because I do have a review from The Outer Rim. So Tom, obviously you've not been on the show in a while. In tribute to Mr. Tom Dennett Cook, I have a section of my show called Reviews from the Outer Rim, where I take reviews from, well, it's mostly letterboxed, but from, all over the internet, really, any reviews that I find interesting. And this one's by a letterboxed user called Patrick Willems, and it says, "It's wild," in capital letters, "that this movie kicked off a whole torture porn wave of horror when it's really just a clever little thriller with no actual torture."
And yes, I would agree with that. If someone asked me what type of film is this, I would say not horror, but maybe psychological thriller, a very dark psychological thriller to me.
I would agree with that to a certain extent. I think there are enough kind of gory elements in it to kind of classify it as a horror film. But yeah, it is mostly like a mystery film.
Yeah.
It's essentially, like you said, you've got two guys, they're in this abandoned building in this bathroom, don't know why they're there, and then you find out obviously the backstory about Jigsaw and kind of the police investigation into trying to catch him and things like that, and it's then the story kind of develops from there. But yeah, you're right, it's let's put it this way, it's not a torture film.
No,
there is a point in the series, and we'll get to this a bit later, when the films became pretty much mostly about the torture scenes
and how, As I said before, how sort of extreme can you go with the traps, right? That's what people started watching the films for.
Yeah.
Trap after trap after trap.
And that's the thing about horror fans is, they... I know, not all horror fans. I don't want to tar every...
Hashtag not all horror fans.
I knew you were going to do that. Not all horror fans are the same. But there are a certain element of horror fans that they just want gore and brutality, and so the producers or whoever decided, oh my god, this is what the fans want, because let's face it, critics aren't fans of these types of films, so you are trying to put a lot of fan service in there and a lot of pleasing of horror fans, and a lot of them are like, we just want more, we've got to make the traps more brutal. So hence there was a point where, yes, that happened.
I feel like the producers of the film had to really twist and turn to try and continue the series. When you're killing off your main guy, was it Saw 3?
Saw 3.
When you're killing off, yeah, exactly.
It's slightly more convoluted than that.
But when you're doing that and you're sending a clear message that, oh, Jigsaw's dead now, but you're still producing 4, 5, 6. I feel like they really were twisting and turning and trying to move themselves into these sort of hard to please places just to keep the thing going and going and going.
Yeah, yeah, sure. For what is essentially, like we said, a mystery thriller.
Yes.
And I suppose at this point, I should say, we've sort of already said what the story is already. But yeah, so James Wan, this is his full-length debut film. Lee Whannell, it's also his full-length debut as a writer, also as an actor, because he gets the introducing credit at the end. So, Tom, we kind of said already, but just, yeah. What is the synopsis, or the very brief kind of story of Saw?
So two men wake up in a room, no memory of how they got here. They're both chained to sort of a metal pipe via the ankles, and they, through a series of audio recordings, they realize that the only way they have to escape is to saw their way out, essentially through the ankles, which interestingly gives the rise to the, and they realize as they're going through the film that it's somehow linked to the serial killer known as Jigsaw, and we switch from them being inside the room to a policeman who is investigating the crimes as things go along, and I suppose, yeah, that sort of highlights it quite directly in that the name Saw is about them escaping, right?
Yeah.
But as the series went on, that's the only time that soaring was actually part of the franchise. But having a saw was actually quite ubiquitous throughout the whole series.
Yeah, and it's high, because he's quite the literal Jigsaw killer as, yes, well. But, there was a film called Jigsaw afterwards. There's also a film called Pieces, which has a sort of not quite a literal idea, but it's someone who's, Jigsaw Pieces is quite a motif, although Pieces, amazing film though it is hilariously bad in the best kind of ways.
Great.
But yeah, it's not the first time Jigsaw Pieces had been used in horror as a sort of visual motif, if that makes sense. But yeah, I guess that kind of ties in to the Saw name as well. So in terms of the film itself, so you said you hadn't seen it since it originally came out. So one of the things that I hate when people talk about films is this, does it still hold up?
Yeah.
Because to me, that's bullshit. That's a total small-minded way of looking at films, because inevitably enough time for any film is going to pass where it's like, society changes, technology changes, and things like that, where, yeah, obviously things are going to look as of the time that they were made. It's just a thing that happens. It's not, oh my God, how terrible, like this film that I used to like, it's now too old now and I can't like it anymore because it's, whatever.
Jigsaw didn't use Snapchat. Right, that's it. I'm not interested in this anymore.
That would have been very different. That would have been a very different film entirely. Yeah. Anyway, all that said, did it hold up for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, in fact, it was even better than I remembered, in that, as I mentioned previously, I think it had been, the name Saw, the franchise, had been diluted by the numerous sequels. But if you go back to the first one and you watch that just on its own merits, I think it's a great film.
Cool. So what is it about it that you enjoyed so much?
I would say it's the unfolding mystery of the film. There are traps. There's the very basic beats that the franchise will carry forward all the way through. But even the traps themselves are more basic and visceral rather than these. I'm going to say now, like one of my least, I know you were going to ask me later what one of my favorite traps is, but I'm going to put this out there. One of my least favorite traps of the whole thing, I think, is in Jigsaw. So the not the most recent one, but the one before.
The one that came out a couple of years ago.
Where they've got lasers. Now, when you start bringing lasers into things, you've taken me out of this straight away. Come on now.
Frickin' laser beams.
Yeah, come on. It's not like Jigsaw Star Wars. Like, lasers is silly to me. Whereas back in the first one, the pure fans, we just liked the basic traps. The bear trap. Like, that's a very iconic trap of the Saw series. You had that, you had barbed wire, and you had a literal saw. Like, things that you could think, oh my God, if I was chained to something and I had to saw my leg off. It reminds me, was it Mad Max, the original? Do you remember Mad Max, the original one where he says to the guy at the end, like, this car's going to explode or something, but here's a hacksaw. Yes. If you're willing to, like, saw your arm off or something, you can escape. It's that sort of, it's the type of thing you'd have a conversation with a friend down the pub. Well, certain friends, maybe. Like, oh, would you saw your leg off to survive, you know, to escape, kind of thing. It's something that we can all relate to. I cannot relate to being lasered.
Well, I mean, if you're trying to get hair removed, maybe.
That's true.
Or your eyes fixed, maybe.
That is true.
But yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah, it's a bit Moonrakery,
yeah,
I guess.
Very Moonrakery.
Although, you know, there are certain traps where you're thinking, like Jigsaw or Hoffman, or they must, you know, they clearly have like an engineering degree and lots of time
to
put
time.
All these traps together and set them up in these abandoned buildings and no one finds them, and like kids don't sort of find them and kind of graffiti them or ruin them or whatever.
That's a great film in and of itself. Attack the Block meets Jigsaw. Some random kids break into a warehouse and realize they've accidentally wandered into Jigsaw's playground. Come on, make that a film.
There we
right
go. There. Hey, you know, I've done 9, so who knows? You know, fucking may as well keep it going. Or if they ever remake it, which I'm sure they will remake it eventually.
But yes, they probably will.
Yeah, people got to make money. Hey, you know, there's no original ideas out there anymore.
Coming to Disney Plus in 2022.
If only, that'd be amazing. In terms of the way the film looks, there are a lot of films from this period that have a similar look. The first one of these that I saw was, and I've mentioned this on a few different shows now, is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake, where it's got a very desaturated look.
Yes.
Everything looks either grey or brown, or kind of very dark green. It's got those kind of very ugly colours. Now, I would say this film, although it's not as bad as a few of the sequels, it's also got kind of that look. Now, is that something that you think is just, it's just, you know, a relic of this period in history? Because one of the things, because I got to say, I watched all the films before recording this. When you get to Jigsaw, and it's like, you get cinematography, where it's like, oh my God, there's actual bright colours in the cinematography. No way. This is awesome. There's actual full colour spectrum. Like, that kind of, you know, I was blown away by that. Let's put it that way.
I call it the, was it filmed in Vancouver? Colour. Because,
or
yeah,
Bulgaria.
I know. Yes, Bulgaria or Vancouver. I know exactly what you mean. And I think you find a lot of these films. Go back and watch The X-Files.
Yes.
All episodes of The X-Files look like the first Saw film. And you're absolutely right in terms of that colour. I think it fits the first film very well. You know, it's quite industrial, grimy, dingy. I think actually that's why it's very jarring, because you've had the same color palette sort of all the way through the series. When you get to Saw 3D, if you remember the first trap in Saw 3D, the sort of the intro where it's in public, that trap really stands out to me. I think Saw 3D is pretty awful as a film, but that trap is very different to any of the other ones.
The only one that I can remember, again, this is having seen all 8 films bar the
I'm
new
so
one
sorry for you.
I think that's the only one that actually takes place in broad daylight.
Exactly. And I think that was I think they could have played on that a lot more throughout 8 films, for goodness sakes. That's the one time that it didn't take place in the back of a Macro. So I think for the first film, the colour scheme and the look is fine, but it's very jarring by the 7th or 8th iteration.
Well, it's interesting you say that. So the cinematographer, David Armstrong, who did the cinematography on first Saw film, he also did Saws 1-6. Mm. He isn't the cinematographer on Saw 3D or Jigsaw. So that might be, again, why they look slightly different.
Yes. And would you say you preferred the one on Jigsaw than all the rest of them?
Yeah, because when you've watched seven films that have this sort of very muted, desaturated colour palette, and then you watch a film that's like, oh my God, there's, like I said, there's like, I can see red. And like the puppet, like the reds in the puppet really stand out. Again, it's because it's a newer film, I guess. But in cinematography now, in post-production, they do stuff like colour grading where they make reds more red, I guess, and stuff like that if you want to. But yeah, it was a bit jarring in a good way, though. In terms of the torture aspect, like we said, the first film doesn't really have these like huge elaborate torture set pieces at all. They're very kind of matter-of-factly, they're kind of just passed over very quickly, bar the reverse bear trap scene.
Yes.
And I guess Dr. Gordon sawing his foot off. But even that is sort of, it's not gratuitous. It's a word I use a lot on this show, in that you see him cutting a couple of times, but you don't actually see him literally sawing his foot off.
No, and I think that would be... That would be a bit too extreme.
Not in a Lucio Fulci film. Like, you know, you wouldn't have like literally like prosthetic leg and Cariel Wiss kind of literally sawing it and bits going everywhere. But you can hear like screaming and like you can see his face and he's got one of his intense faces on.
Yeah, well, there are a few intense faces. Yeah. I think, and again, that shows us the difference between the first one, which is absolutely, as you say, there is almost an implication of what's happening.
Yeah.
Whereas then as you get further into them, it's like, look at this man's head. It's exploded in front of you. And by the end of it, it's look at this. It's in 3D and an eyeball's like flown at your face.
Innards flying at you.
Awful. It's like a butcher's shop, for
it's
goodness
like
sake.
Flesh of Frankenstein. Yeah, no, I agree. Like, because the traps, and it's to do with the editing style, because they go through very quickly, a lot of it's more left to the imagination. Now, there's reasons for that, which are budgetary reasons.
I'm sure.
I imagine, because one of the other things that is fairly well known from the backstory of Saw is that it was made for about $1 million, maybe even slightly less than that, which tells you a lot.
I would say it doesn't look like that, though.
Well, that's what I mean. It doesn't look like a film that's made for $1 million, and that there are films that are made for a lot more than $1 million that look shit.
Yeah,
quite frankly.
Yeah, I would agree.
And are shit.
Yeah.
One of which I'm talking about on the next show. So yeah, just spoiler for the next show, everyone. But yeah, it goes to show that if you have a director who knows what they're doing in terms of composing shots, and you can hide certain things, that's why the editing style is in a lot of way kind of what it is because they had to cover a lot of stuff up. Because I don't, have you seen any of the behind the scenes stuff for the first film? Did you? So they made Saw in 18 days.
Wow.
It was a very, very quick shoot. So there were things like, when they were doing, scenes, they only had two takes that they could do with the actors because they had to move on as quickly as possible to the next shot so they could get everything in.
I would say it certainly doesn't feel like that when you're watching the film. You don't get the sense that this is a low-budget, rushed film at
all.
No.
No, not at all. But that is the conditions under which it was made, weirdly. So they filmed the whole film was made on this one kind of lot. So all the rooms you see, like in reality, they're all literally on the same sort of area. I think, I don't know if it's quite how, like, you know, with some low budget films where one room in one scene, it's a nightclub, in another scene, it's like someone's bedroom and all that kind of stuff. It wasn't quite like that. But it's goes to show, like, if you have imagination, you have like a certain amount of talent. James Wan obviously wasn't experienced at this point. We've got Jigsaw in the next room.
We do, yeah. We've got a few traps going on.
Building
right
his traps for the next film.
Yeah.
It just goes to show you, like, budget isn't a limitation. So when we watch a lot of these horror films now, you know, they're made for very, very low money, but they're just bad.
And with that, with the low budget, I'm sure Saw must be one of these films. Well, it must be because of the numerous sequels. It must be one of those low budget, massive returns, right? How much did it make?
Oh God, I think it's several hundred million dollars.
Yeah, so
off the top of my head,
it's all about the concept. I would say the spiritual successor to Saw, and I'm not saying these are good films at all, but there's things like Would You Rather, which follows a sort of similar pattern in some ways. There's Escape Room, and I believe that one must have done well enough because there's a sequel to that coming out. So there definitely are. I think you've got this formula with, in fact, there's loads of other ones. There's a Fermat's Room.
Yeah, Fermat's Room.
Yeah. Waz.
W Delta Z.
Yeah, oh yes. I call it Waz.
Waz. Oh, it looks like Waz. Yeah.
Which I think I heard was meant to be a Saw film, or is that just a rumor?
Not anything that I've heard.
Yeah.
Exam. You did get a lot of kind of multiple people in one room.
That's right.
Or one place having to work together. They're all very different.
Yeah.
Which is, in fact, the plot of Cube.
Yes,
so this is one of the things I was going to say. So what I would say about Saw is a lot of them, some of the sequels more so, but it's essentially Cube mixed with Seven.
Yeah,
so although Lee Whannell has denied that he intentionally sort of watched Seven and thought, well, I like that, I'm going to do the same thing in my film, it is the cop story is very, very similar to Seven in that you've got a serial killer. You don't know who he is. He's evading the police. He's moral in that he's killing people for things that they have done, which he deems to be bad.
Yeah.
And then the police, one of whom is sort of, you know, grizzled older detective, one of whom's younger, they're sort of on his trail and all that kind of stuff. It is, kind of similar to Seven. I don't think it's directly the same as Seven. But yeah.
Even the, again, going back to what you were saying with the colours and the look of it is quite Seven-ish.
Yes. Darius Conji and David Finch have a lot to answer for. As much as I love Seven, that look was immediately then ripped off by a lot of other films, including this one.
Now, have you ever wondered, I'm sure it's kept you up at night, but have you ever wondered what ever happened to Danny Glover's character?
Well, didn't he die at the end of Saw 1?
Well, you'd think that, but actually, if you're a real Saw fan, you would have played the PlayStation 2 official Saw game and the sequel, the official Saw game 2, in which you find out that he didn't die and, in fact, is captured by Jigsaw, and then you have to go through a series of traps.
Oh, right.
Spoiler, he then does die. So just to tie it all in, he is dead now.
Yeah. Cool. All right, well, that's a curious thing to know. Yes. Like, it would have been nice if they'd explained that. Because see, what these people, they don't appreciate is that, you know, I'm only watching the films.
Well,
I don't want to need to play a video game to get the full lore.
A full Jigsaw fan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. If you don't watch the full, if you don't enter into the mythos, Greg, it's the full Saw universe.
Okay, is this like people who Star Wars fans who watch, like, you know, the Clone Wars
and read all the comics,
expanded universe, and all this kind of stuff?
Expanded Saw universe, yes.
Yeah, and you mentioned it earlier. Yeah, this is an example of a film where it is universe building, and obviously when they made the sequels, obviously they expanded into the universe itself, which is. Yeah, I think this is one of the only films from the 2000s where they kind of did that. The only other ones that I can think of are like The Devil's Rejects, where House of a Thousand Corpses came out, introduced these characters. Spoiler, they all survive at the end of the original film. And then, we want to bring all these characters back. But it does it in a different way, whereas with Saw, because Devil's Rejects looks completely different from House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yeah.
With Saw, there's a lot of continuity in all the sequels. This is one of the things I'll say about it. This isn't a series where, you know, bar like near the end, there's a lot of the people working behind the scenes are there in a lot of the sequels. So, for example, already mentioned the cinematographer is the same for most of them. Also, the composer, Charlie Clouser, used to be in Nine Inch Nails. He does the score on all of the Saw films, including, I believe, the new one as well. And the Saw, it's not... It's weird. It's not a score that people talk about as sort of one of, oh my God, this is one of the best scores in like the history of horror. But the last 5 minutes of that film works really well because of the score, I would say.
As soon as that music hits, you know.
Shit's on.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a great... I think the score is probably one of the more underrated parts of the film, actually. I think it's very atmospheric.
It does, and it's not full-blown throughout the film as well. It's quiet when it needs to be quiet. One of the things I would say is like the scene with Amanda in the reverse bear trap and her trying to escape. Even though the editing is going absolutely nuts, the score, for a lot of it, isn't really... It's not full-blown blaring like loud industrial music. It's quite quiet for a lot of it. It's only really blaring when the camera is going like 360 and like all the nutty video music video editing is kind of happening and all that kind of stuff.
And I think that scene is quite... That hasn't aged so well.
Yes, I was going to mention this.
It does. It does look like an early 2000s MTV music video.
It does.
I was waiting for Cisco to pop up. But I think the music I think is absolutely underrated. And once you've heard that Saw score, like as soon as you hear it again, like it just brings you back. Yeah. It's great. Brilliant.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm not a fan of, we talked about, obviously we both like this film a lot.
Yes.
A couple of things that are not so great. I wouldn't say the editing for the whole film, but it's the editing during the torture sequences where, as you said, it's got a lot of kind of music video, lots of rapid cuts.
Yes.
Camera, it's just a bit over the top,
yeah,
I would say, which is a shame because that sequence is actually really well put together because it's very much like, you know, we don't know what's going on. So we see the character, you know, Shawnee Smith, like Amanda, she's sat at the chair, she's got this contraption on, we watch the video, Jigsaw explains what's going to happen, we see what happens with the bear trap, fuck, you know, if she doesn't get there, like her face is going to get ripped off. And then you see kind of the other guy lying on the floor, you think he's dead, oh no, wait, he's actually alive, this is so the way the sequence is put together is really good. Unfortunately, yeah, and like with the guy in the barbed wire pit as well, you know, with that, it's all, yeah, I wasn't a fan of those elements so much.
And as you say, I suppose it is a
product of the time.
You wouldn't film it like that now, most likely. I'm sure if they went back and remade it now, they probably wouldn't do the fast forward frantic
in Jigsaw. None of that editing, even though it's the same editor, it's Kevin Grutter, who edited most of the films apart from the ones that he directed later on, like Saw 3D, for example. Yeah, even then, that type of editing isn't present in that film. And
I think a tight shot on her head, just like in real time, and showing the fear and the concern... that's probably an understatement. I'm rather concerned. Much more effective than some sort of weird Matrix-style 3D revolving around you.
Was the style of the time.
It was the style of the time.
The other thing that's a bit naff is the acting, which is not something that, look, don't get me wrong, it's a horror film. Most of the time, look, these days, horror film acting, you know what you're going to get. But some of the acting in this is all right. So Lee Whannell, I think he's okay, considering he'd never acted in a film before. Some of the dialogue he gave himself is a bit naff.
Yeah.
like 15 hooker gangbangs and things like that, or the best experience I've had without lubricant or whatever he said. Yeah, certain lines like that people have picked up, and it's like, okay. Incidentally, if you've seen like Insidious, for example, yeah, some of the comedy he writes in his films that he writes are, you know, not my cup of tea, let's put it that way. Cary Elwes.
Yeah.
divisive, I would say.
Yes. As someone who's seen the whole series, I have to say her character is my least favourite character.
His character.
is the least favourite character in the whole series.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's probably going a bit too far. Well, but I know what you mean.
I think you can't fault, though, Jigsaw, even from the first film, a great character, like fully formed. Yeah, great acting.
Tobin Bell is the saviour of all the sequels, even the ones where his character is dead and it's just him flashbacks.
His voice is so iconic and so full of character that, I think he is absolutely... And in fact, maybe you wouldn't have got any sequels if it wasn't for his performance.
Yeah, Saw in a lot of ways is quite similar to Friday the 13th, in that we associate Friday the 13th with Jason Voorhees. Jason Voorhees isn't really in the first Friday the 13th film, though. He only appears right at the end, like Jigsaw.
Very true.
And then obviously from then on, it's kind of, the films are totally different, because what works in this film's favour is it's a mystery film. You know, there's no, it's not a pre-existing IP, as they say. Like, so...
But okay, interestingly, I totally get what you're saying with that comparison there. But would people generally say the first Friday the 13th is the best of the bunch?
Well, Tom Dennett Kirk and Scott Priestley, who are big Friday the 13th fans, their favourite is Friday the 13th Part 4.
I would imagine that's because it's reached its peak in terms of all of the beats that make a Friday the 13th film.
Yeah, to paraphrase Scott, obviously if he was here, he would say something very similar to this, is that basically if an alien landed on, it came among us and they wanted to know about a Friday the 13th film, that's one that you would show them, because it's got all the elements, essentially. And it's, you know, in his opinion, the best of the Friday the 13th films.
It's a strange alien.
Well, very, you know, hey, they want to know about sort of, you know, Jason Voorhees. Maybe they were from the 80s.
They worship him as some sort of god.
Speaking of people from the 80s, going back to Cary Elwes for a second.
Yes.
And Danny Glover.
Yes.
What I would say that's interesting, so, is Danny Glover... quite famous for playing a cop already.
Yes. Yeah.
So when we see him, we always kind of have that mental backstory, even though he's not playing the same character.
Well, is this a Lethal Weapon sequel?
Maybe it is. Maybe it's just really, really Mel Gibson, he's gone off and that's killed right. himself or whatever nutty shit that he did in, like, could have done in the other films. But
You may notice, by the way, that they never mention where this... Like, this film...
Yeah, where is it, actually? That's an interesting point. They don't tell you. It could be anywhere in America. Yeah,
it's literally generic town USA.
Somewhere in America. But similarly, and I think Cary Elwes, his performance is a bit mixed, to put it mildly.
Yeah.
I think he's all right in the first half of the film, when he's being doctor, very pared down emotions. He's trying to stay in control. But then when he's required to get angry... and shout a lot.
Yeah.
He makes some very funny faces in this film.
And he's like, I didn't cheat on my wife. He gets very upset. That face is quite...
Allie?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And yeah. So more in the second half of the film, he's not quite as good, unfortunately. And in a way, it's, I think, a mixture of two things. One, as we said... unfortunately, they're only having one or two takes to get all this shit. So if you ain't got it as good as you'd like in maybe the second take, you're a bit fucked because they've got to move on. But also, Cary Elwes, obviously, most famous before this for being Princess Bride, Robin Hood Men in Tights. So sort of foppish kind of characters, you know, very handsome man who would be like a prince. But also in films like, I don't know, Liar Liar or Twister, where he's sort of insincere, kind of foppish, pretentious sort of British man type thing. So when he's being this character and he's, his character's a bit, it's weird. This character's the only one with kind of any kind of complexity to it in a pretty much maybe the whole sort of, apart from Jigsaw himself, because I mean, he does love his family, but he did cheat on his wife at the same time.
Yeah.
So is he a likable character? Is he a character we have sympathy for?
Well, it's really interesting. They build this complex character up, which you maybe could have done more with. There's more to explore with that. And then you never... Well, I would say you never see him. You never see him again is not quite true. You only see him once more.
Yeah.
And for like 2 minutes. Yeah, he never came back again.
Yeah, because unfortunately... part of his contract for this film was that he was entitled to 1% of the gross of the film.
Oh,
and they didn't want to give him that money because it's quite a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then he's like, well, I'd like my money, please.
Yeah.
That I'm entitled to. And they had a legal back and forth. And then obviously they resolved it because he did appear in Saw 3D.
Yeah. Which was, I will say, a great payoff. If you've been watching all of them, because I absolutely didn't expect that. And it's after all that time, I can't think of another film franchise where you've had to wait so long. It would be like if you had Luke Skywalker appear. Yes, I am comparing Saw to the Star Wars universe. It'd be as if you had Luke Skywalker in the first Star Wars film. And by that, Star Wars fans, I mean the fourth one, of course. And then he didn't appear again until the ninth one for the last minute. And he turned up, killed the Emperor, and then disappeared again. That would be what it's like. For Saw fans, that was a real treat.
Yeah, I mean, it's fan service. When,
very much fan
the
service.
The seventh film of any franchise... is never the best one.
No. No, it never is.
Apart from maybe Fast and the Furious, but I haven't seen any of those films. I know that is one of the more popular entries, though.
Right. Okay.
So maybe that's the exception. I don't know. But yeah, on the note when I'm talking about Dr. Gordon, is he, you know, a likable character or not? I just, before we kind of wrap up talking about the film itself, like a lot of people in reviews and when talking about the film, they talk about the morality of the Saw series in terms of Jigsaw, you know, he doesn't technically kill people. He puts them in situations where they have to do certain things to escape. But he, you know, he even talks about this in some of the sequels where he's like, well, I'm not a killer. Like, I find murder distasteful, I think is one of the things he actually says in Saw 5 to Hoffman, which is interesting because certain people do die in these traps to kind of get the other person to learn whatever lesson they have. So to me, Adam, Lee Winnell's character, he doesn't do anything wrong.
He's absolutely the most sympathetic character in the film.
Yeah. And apart from Dr. Gordon's wife and daughter. Okay. Well, but I know what you mean. Of the people in traps, technically.
That theory, and I've seen that a lot. Oh, Jigsaw's not really the baddie, isn't that is? Does anyone know? Anyone who says that, do you know anything about the British or American legal system at all? Jigsaw is absolutely a murderer. 1000%. Just because you don't pull the trigger and kill someone, the fact that he has gone to such efforts to build these traps that could potentially destroy people and make their heads explode and rip out their innards. Jigsaw is completely a murderer, and I feel like if you don't think that's true, you're missing the point of the films. Yes, these are morality type the idea is morality, right? Oh, if you're learning to value your life, yes, on one hand, but Jigsaw is still an absolute psychopath. It's like watching Joker and finishing the film and thinking, oh, what a great guy. If only his neighbor had gone out with him, all of this wouldn't have happened. Like, it's just, I think people are missing the point on this one.
Interesting you mentioned the Joker, actually. So another review from The Outer Rim. It's from Letterboxd user Will Menaker. I think that's how you say it, mate. Sorry if I got your name wrong. It says, the Saw movies are an interesting relic of Bush-era America. Each successive one in the series gets massively dumber and more gruesome, but the original is an effective grooming and original articulation of proto-Jokerification of America. It's his term, not mine. Jigsaw captures the moral framework of where America was headed, namely that you can torture anyone to death provided you possess the absolute moral certainty that we do indeed live in a society. And also, that it's not really your fault because your victim could have easily done something impossible if they wanted to not die.
Wow. So that's the first time I've heard someone basically compare the Saw films to like Guantanamo Bay and 9/11.
It's not, unfortunately, the first time I have. So a lot of, and when I talk about the next film that I talk about, a lot of people talk about, well, it's about, you know, Abu Ghraib, and it's about, you know, the American war in the Middle East, and it's about Guantanamo Bay, as you say. Now, interestingly, I have read something by Lee Winnell and James Wan where, yeah, people have said, well, this is what this film's about. You know how people, like, when they analyze films, they talk about, well, you know, this was going on in the world, and this is a reflection of this. They say, nope.
Yeah.
Straight away. Like when people, you know, say, well, the Saw is like, it's a torture porn film. And James Wan and Lee Winnell go, no, it's not a torture porn film. There's not really even that much torture in the film at all. We weren't making a torture porn film. What are you talking about? So, yeah, it does kind of tie into that as well.
I suppose, yeah, you can make things, you can make the narrative fit to what you want it to.
Exactly.
I personally have never got any of those vibes throughout watching any of the films. So I'm with the filmmakers on this one.
Yeah, I think from their perspective, and I do agree with this, what tends to happen is things happen in cycles and waves. So what happens is people make films as a reaction to what's going on in the movie industry and what's popular at times. So a lot of films in like the late 90s, there were people essentially trying to rip off Scream, but essentially there are a lot of, you know, remakes and a lot of kind of PG-13 rated horror films, and these other directors, which I'm going to be talking about on this show incidentally, were making films as a reaction to that. So this film, you know, Cabin Fever by Eli Roth, House of a Thousand Corpses by Rob Zombie, Hortense Shawn by Alexandre Ayer, you know, films like that were made as a reaction to those films. So yes, all right, it's post 9/11. There's even a whole book about sort of movies post 9/11 and how 9/11 has an impact on it that I own, incidentally. It's a good book. But yeah, you're right. I'm waffling, but yeah, essentially you're right. Sometimes people just make films and it's just a film. It's not subtext, or it's not a metaphor or an allegory for something else going on in the real world.
I suppose to go back to what I was saying to you at the beginning, now I'm thinking about this in terms of sequels. Was this setting up for a sequel and the world building of it? If we look at other films that James Wan's sort of made or directed, produced, Insidious, you mentioned, The Conjuring as well. Mm. Like, all of those films have had multiple sequels.
Yeah.
So
he's good at world building.
Well, right. So what were those films also made with the idea of, you know, bringing sequels out? Because I just feel like Saw is such a world building film, I can't believe that it wasn't going to be have a sequel to it.
Well, that's interesting. So I suppose at this point we should sort of maybe move into kind of discussion of the sequels and things of that nature, but before we do that, I have a question for you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, Saw, how bad is it? So in terms of a date movie, is it good, not bad, bad, very bad, or is it the worst?
Oh, it's definitely not the worst.
No.
I'd say it's good. I'd say if you've never seen Saw, I think actually you would really enjoy it, in terms of it would be different to what you thought it was going to be like, probably because if you had a passing sort of idea of what the whole franchise was about. You'd think, oh, how gory is this going to be? And it wouldn't be that gory. But again, it's all about the twist. I would love to be in a Saw-based trap that would lobotomize my brain so that I'd never seen Saw before.
Oh, wow.
So I could go back and watch it again for the first time.
There's a lot of films I would love to do that
yeah.
for. Definitely.
Yeah.
I would also agree and say that it's a good date movie. Yeah, I mean, there's some elements of torture in it, but it's not a bad date movie, everybody. Come on now. I mean, I am talking about this on the show for a certain reason that will become apparent as we go on. But yeah, this is not, let's say, it's not even Hostel.
Oh, no, not at all.
Well, it's not, you know, all the... This film, unfortunately, did inspire a lot of shit films. Now, Hostel, you know, you can say what you want about Hostel. I have my opinions on it. Wait, listen to the next episode for those, basically. But I'm not even talking about high-end stuff like Hostel. I'm talking more about stuff like... Do you remember, like, Captivity?
I have, unfortunately, seen that.
Oh, no. So we're talking about sort of films like that, which kind of came as a result of this. But that's not Saw's fault.
No.
I do not blame James Wan and Lee Whannell for this at all. It's a good date movie. You can have a lot of fun watching this. It's not gruesome. I mean, it's a horror film. Obviously, you know, if you're with someone and they don't like horror films, you know, they're not going to like any horror film, regardless of what it is. No, it's not even gory. There's, like, minor gore in it. Yeah, I mean, I guess the worst bit is when Carrie Elwes, Dr. Gordon, is sort of cutting his leg off, but, well, his ankle, well, his foot, really. But even then, it's mostly off-screen. It's not massively disturbing.
I think it's to do with, like, you mentioned Hostel is quite mean-spirited, and it's nasty, whereas Saw is I think more is a clever thriller.
Yeah.
That builds up a great story and then has, as I said, this great twist. It's not mean-spirited. Yes, it's got a few traps in and things like that, but it does make you think about the morality of things, and it does make you think about the value of life.
Yeah, yeah, sure, definitely. I mean, yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I would say there are films in the Saw series that are mean-spirited, I think, but this one isn't one of them. Like, the people who are put in the traps, they're put in the traps for a reason. And to be honest, most of those people, we don't really find anything out about them anyway. Like, they're just people, oh, you did this, and now you're dead.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, one of them escapes, who's Amanda. And, yeah, the only person who... You know, like you said, that is sort of, I do kind of feel sorry for, is Adam, but technically his fate is left unknown, unresolved at the end of the film.
Yes.
Only resolved later by sequels when we actually find out what happened to him.
That's
yeah.
right.
Technically, we do not see him die. He is technically still alive at the end of the film.
He is. If you only watched one film, he's still there now, having yes. a bath.
Which leads us on to, now I don't want to spend too long on this because Saw, it got a lot of sequels, everybody. So without sort of wishing to sort of dwell on a lot of these, there are many Saw sequels. There are in fact 8 Saw sequels in all, one of which we've not seen. So obviously we're not going to talk about. James Wan, he only directed the first Saw film. Second Saw film, which was the next year, 2005, directed by Darren Lynn Bousman. Now, the interesting thing about Saw 2 is Bousman had put together a script called The Desperate, which he was trying to get made, and brought it to, I think it's the same producers who brought out Saw, and they said, this is great, we should make this a Saw film.
Ah, interesting.
And hence, it became a Saw film. So this is kind of like one of those sort of straight-to-video Hellraiser sequels, but actually sort of good and not sort of cynical, because apparently it is very similar to what Saw 2 is actually very similar to what The Desperate was meant to be anyway,
right?
Which does kind of make sense. So Saw 2, for those of you who haven't seen it, so this one's got Donnie Wahlberg in it, not Mark Wahlberg, Donnie Wahlberg. He's a cop. He's a bit of a prick. He's got a son he doesn't get on with. His son goes missing. It turns out Jigsaw has kidnapped him and several other people who are now basically trapped in a house, including Amanda and the black guy from Showgirls. And they essentially have 2 hours to get out before they die of gas poisoning. And the traps in this one are slightly different in that there are traps in the house, but they're to get antidotes to the gas. And basically, Mark Wahlberg basically wants Jigsaw to tell him where his son is, and Jigsaw wants him to just stay there and listen to what he has to say.
And I think this one is, it's sort of an expanded version. The idea being, if two people in a saw trap is quite entertaining, what if we had six or seven people in a sort of saw-based house? Think about six times the excitement. you've said that about how it was a different film and sort of pigeonholed in. I can absolutely see that because it is a tonal shift with that type of thing. It's more of a group dynamic rather than a sort of a two-hander. I would say Saw 2 has a great twist at the end.
I remember seeing
Saw 2 again at the cinema. No, sorry, that was the only one I saw on DVD, but that one I didn't see the ending for, until I didn't see that one coming, and I thought that was great. Secondly, I think it has one of the best sort of traps of the whole series in as well.
Well, we're going to come on to that in a minute. I pretty much like this one as well. It's probably the second best of the Saw films. Tobin Bell totally carries this film. By far, it's the only film that he's really in it, and he's like actually a proper character. The next film he's in as well, but he's in a hospital bed a lot and doesn't really talk. As this one, he's like very sinister, and I'd say it's mostly good. I've got a few issues with it, mostly Donnie Wahlberg. He's not great. The story kind of, it's that they need to get these antidotes to get out, and then they sort of forget that halfway through, and it becomes, this big Mexican guy wants to get everyone because he needs the numbers on the backs of their necks. And it becomes less about, this person needs to do a trap and they die, and then this person does a trap and they die, and it's just this Mexican guy just going around kind of killing everyone. And then it just loses a bit of focus. But I enjoyed it. It's one of the only ones that I would rewatch again.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So Bousman, he then directed Saw 3, which came out in 2006. This one, I would say, overall is basically mostly backstory for Amanda, because one of the twists at the end of Saw 2 is that she is actually a Jigsaw accomplice. Wait for this to become a twist several times.
Yeah.
So where you talk about sort of the first film leaving certain things unanswered, there's someone wearing a pig mask who kidnaps Dr. Gordon and Adam. And it doesn't tell you in Saw who it is, but through Saw 2, we know that was Amanda who did that. So this one is basically... Right, so this is where, unfortunately, the plot gets very kind of convoluted. So there's two stories. So essentially, the Jigsaw story is he's, in his hospital, in a hospital bed, dying. Amanda is helping him kind of stay alive. A doctor called Dr. Lynn Denlon is abducted from a hospital and basically forced to basically keep him alive. And the trap is essentially for her is that if Jigsaw dies, this shotgun pointing at her head is going to go off or something like that. At the same time, Robert the Bruce from Braveheart, his son died in a drunk driving accident, and he, is having difficulty letting go. And so all these people who were involved in the accident, he then basically has to, forgive them, or I don't know. At this point, what I would say is this film I have a huge problem with. So this film is kind of where the whole, I would say, torture porn thing kind of starts. I have a lot of problems with this film because instead of it being one person in a trap and whether they escape or not is up to them, this one is, we've got a guy who, again, similar to Carrie Elwes, is making lots of faces and kind of, very bad acting. in this film. And all the traps are essentially, this person is trapped, and it's basically, I could help you, it's up to me, though. And some of the traps I did think were unnecessarily sadistic. Particularly, there's a trap where there's a woman hanging naked in a freezer, and water is being sprayed on her, and she basically freezes to death.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. When the traps switch, and you're right, it is in the third one where there is that tonal shift. When the traps switch from, you could potentially escape from this if you did what you were told.
Exactly.
Versus, you basically can't escape from this even if you tried, because the deck is stacked completely against you. That ruins the franchise.
And they try and explain it in the film by going, well, Amanda's put these traps together, so they're not giving people a chance to escape. Like, literally, right in the first 15 minutes of the film, there's a guy who, if anyone's seen the end of Hellraiser, essentially it's that, where a guy's basically got these chains coming out of his body, and he has to basically pull them out to escape. And it's like, okay, that's not nice. But then one of the... So a character who appeared in Saw 1 and 2, who's a cop, was played by Dina Meyer, who is Detective Kerry. She's in this trap, which is called the Angel Trap, which is quite a well-known trap. But the thing is, she does what she needs to do, but then she can't actually escape.
Mm.
So she's done her trap. She's done what she needs to do, but she still dies anyway. And I'm like, right, so basically I'm watching this woman who, through no fault of her own, is now just going to die for no reason.
Yeah, that's as
just like
that
no.
ruined it. Yeah,
no, that sucks, I'm afraid. And yeah, that's just one of the many, many, many problems that I had with this film. I don't want to kind of focus on it too much. The worst part of the film is, again, I don't know when the last time you saw a lot of these movies, if you've
this
seen
was quite a long time
quite a long
ago,
time ago.
Yeah.
There's a part of the film where the doctor is essentially cutting a bit of Jigsaw's skull out to relieve pressure on his brain. That was quite well done and very uncomfortable, as you can imagine. But yeah, the actual central game itself was just crap. And this is a very mean-spirited film. I really don't like this film at all. Like, literally, everyone in the film dies.
Mm.
Everyone dies at some point.
Even Jigsaw.
Even Jigsaw dies. And it's like, I don't know, there's all kinds of twists at the end. And this is the first film where the twist was a bit shit.
Yeah.
It's essentially, oh, so this guy who's, you know, he's upset his son's died, and this woman who's a doctor... Also, believe it or not, on depressants, like, it's a bit weird that they've kind of picked these two people to take part in these games at the same time. I wonder if they're connected in some way. Yeah.
That, I think it got to the point, it became where you were expecting a twist.
Yeah.
And the writers were having to come up with more and more outrageous and ludicrous twists.
Why is this going on?
Yes.
Yeah, so the whole twist is, oh, this is actually Amanda's game. And it's like, okay, all right. And they're doing the whole editing thing and with the music, and which worked obviously really well at the end of Saw. But yeah, it's kind of not so much when it's like, oh, and now everyone's dead.
Yeah.
Oh, great. So yeah, wasn't a fan of that one. It's still better than Saw 4, though, which was directed again by Darren Lynn Bousman in 2007.
A real low point, I would say.
Right. So in this one, it becomes basically a cop drama, more so than any of the other films, because the police are elements in all the Saw films to one extent or another. But this is when the police kind of start to become the major focus of the film. And it's at this point they really start to become straight to DVD quality, in my opinion. So two FBI agents, Agent Strom and Agent Perez, turn up to investigate the death of the police detective from Saw 3. And essentially what happens is Donnie Wahlberg, he's back.
Yeah.
Great.
Of course.
And another detective, Detective Hoffman, gets kidnapped. And one of the police officers from Saw 2, who's again in Saw 3, he... Now, stay with me on this one, because this doesn't make... His game is essentially, he goes into rooms too quickly when he tries to save people. So essentially his game is, he's too eager to save people.
Yeah. Stop being eager.
Yeah, stop doing your job. What a prick. So anyway, again, not quite as mean-spirited as Saw 3, but again, it's a good character this time whose job is to help people. And I think the aim of the game is to essentially make him look like he's a jigsaw accomplice. So it's this man, he's like, you know, a child predator man who works in a seedy motel, and he's tied to a bed, and he has to, you know, make him like poke his eyes out to escape and all this kind of shit. So yeah, I wasn't a fan of this one.
This one is a real I think you could absolutely just skip this one. You could watch the series and like this one. Hoffman, I've always found annoying anyway, and this is the first time that Hoffman appears.
Yeah, so he does appear very briefly in Saw 3 as well, right at the beginning, which is a bit weird because it's like, oh, hi, I'm Detective Hoffman. I've been helping on this investigation. So, no, you haven't, because this is the first time we've seen you. But yes, he becomes more of a character in this one. And hey, it turns out he's also a jigsaw accomplice.
That's right.
So he's had two accomplices.
How many accomplices? This is where it also started to get ludicrous as well. This man owns half the property in whatever city that it is that he's
abandoned warehouses, and he's got an engineering degree. And
he's got about 55 people running around. He's basically the CEO of an organization.
Clearly. And then, again, I think worse than Saw 4, although it's kind of debatable, they're both not great films. Saw 5, next year, 2008, this one is essentially about Hoffman and kind of how he ended up helping out Jigsaw. So, would you believe it? So, Jigsaw, he had a wife, and his wife was pregnant, and then his wife had a miscarriage because some drug addict
slammed
a door on her.
Don't slam doors on
and that
people.
That made Jigsaw want to kill people, even though he was killing people anyway because he had a cancer diagnosis. So what's going on? And then this drug addict guy was the first guy he did a trap on, even though that doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Isn't it always the way they always say in horror? Like, I recently rewatched It Follows, for example. Don't explain the reasoning behind the monster, because that just makes it less scary. When you're getting to the point where I know in the first film they sort of say about, you know, Jigsaw having cancer and all of this type of thing, but it's when you have to go into the minute detail of what made him become Jigsaw, like there's no good of this. It's just making the thing worse. It's not going to make it better.
No, very true. Very true. The only good thing about this... Oh, by the way, there's also a game in the middle with five random people, but no one gives a fuck about that, so it's fine. It's got nothing to do with the central plot of the film anyway, so let's not even bother. So his wife gets a box. That also happens. The only good thing that happens in this film is Agent Strom, who I didn't like in either Saw 4 or Saw 5. I thought he was not a likeable character at all. He gets crushed by a room. Right, at the end of this film. That's the only good thing that happens in this film.
That's right. Nasty.
Very nasty. Other than that, again, not a film that you need to watch unless you're like a fan of the series. Because at this point, it's, you know, Tobin Bell appearing in flashbacks are the only things that are making these films watchable. But then you get Saw 6. Now, I'm not saying Saw 6 is a good film by any stretch of the imagination, but it was more fun than the previous films. So this one is directed by Kevin Grotert, who was the editor of the first five films. Came out in 2009. This is the only one that is sort of about something. This is essentially about American healthcare, the American healthcare insurance system, and how shit it is, and how fucked you are in America if you get ill, essentially, because they charge you like thousands upon thousands of dollars just for being ill. It's like, how dare you be ill? How dare you need help?
But imagine being a director and getting that phone call. We want you to direct Saw 6. what would you think to that?
I mean, hey, these are still in cinemas at this point.
Yeah, you're
they
right. They never went straight to straight to VOD.
No, they would never went straight to anything. They were, you know, again, every Halloween Saw sequel came out and they made money.
Yeah.
You know, if they all made money, we'd be up to like Saw 30 by now.
Yeah.
That's generally
how the film business works. So even at 6, they're still making money.
They're still making enough money to kind of continue, although, well, we'll see. So this one, again, there's Hoffman stuff, but that's not really all that interesting. Hoffman at this point basically becomes like a supernatural being who can just kill everyone, and he knows everything that's going on somehow. And he's just
much less interesting than Jigsaw as a character.
Yeah, so these ones, basically, Tobin Bell only really appears in the odd flashback. And obviously his voice is still used somehow for the traps, even though he's dead. So where are they getting his voice from? They must have some wacky voice modulator thing where, yeah, it gives you his voice somehow. So, the guy in the trap, he's made out to be a really horrible person. And then, he basically, for most of these traps, he has to essentially choose, well, you could let this person live or this person live. So I thought these traps were a bit less mean-spirited because the guy's already a bit of a prick anyway.
Mm.
So the fact he's being put in this position is like, okay, well, he's a horrible person. And it's like, well, he is it. And also, at the very least, he's at least letting some people live.
Yes.
So at that point, it's like, okay, fine. So this one I thought was a bit more watchable than the others. Well, a bit more watchable than 3, 4, and 5. 3 is all right, but I don't like it for different reasons. It's definitely better than 4 and 5, though.
I'd say 4 and 5 are the low points.
Definitely. Although, we've forgotten maybe the actual low point, which is Saw 7, a.k.a. Saw 3D, which I remember we saw in Central London. Is it Leicester Square? Was it Piccadilly Circus?
If you're going to see a Saw film, you want to go in the middle of the day to a proper cinema at Leicester Square to get the full experience. If only it had been on at the IMAX.
I think it probably was, well, in fairness. That would be slightly
now, here's a very slight tangent, but I was just thinking about this. These 3D films. Now, of course, 3D cinemas, 3D films are now not as popular as they were sort of 5-10 years ago. 3D TVs, they're not really a thing anymore. So a lot of these 3D films, like Saw 3D, you either had to watch them in the cinema, or that's kind of it now.
Yeah, pretty much.
I can't imagine watching that in non-3D. The only selling point of it was that I'd made it through 6 films, and by God, I'm going to watch the 7th one.
My dad is a huge kind of technology mark, so he, like, any kind of new technology, he's on it straight away. And there are films that he saw at the cinema, like he saw The Final Destination at the cinema because it was in 3D. So he saw the worst of the Final Destination films at the cinema. He'd never seen any of the others. He only saw it because it was in 3D. And he was like, Dad, why are you watching this?
Will people ever know the joy of Piranha 3DD?
Oh.
They never will, because they'll never be able to watch it in the way that the filmmakers intended it to be.
So, yeah. So this film is very bad.
Very, very bad.
Very bad. It was a bad omen when, from what I remember, I don't know if you remember this, but we were, waiting around for the film to start. Say it was meant to start 8 o'clock. It gets to about 8:30 and the opening credits, the trailers hadn't started yet.
Yes.
And you were the only one to get up and say, are you not meant to be playing the film now?
I had to show them my card that said I've seen all the other Saw films. And please, can you now show me this one?
Oh, I wish I had one of those cars. Well, imagine what I could do with one of those. Yeah. This film is very bad.
Yes.
Very, very bad. Essentially, story.
It's non-existent. The story
there's
means,
a stupid story.
It goes from, hey, here's a trap, to here's another trap. It's in 3D. It's almost like one of those sample, the thing you, if you bought a 3D TV and you get a little sampler DVD, that's all it is. It means nothing.
But the limited story, though. So Sean Patrick Flannery, who, if he's in your film, it's a bad sign, everybody. He is a Jigsaw survivor, except he's not really a Jigsaw survivor, because it's got to the point now, there's been so many films, there's actually survivor groups for Jigsaw. Yes. Is that not kind of you going to your therapist after you've been to the police and said, hi, this horrible thing happened to me? It's just kind of fan service, because, that woman from the start of Saw 6 who cut half her arm off, she's there. And then, Dr. Gordon's there.
Yeah.
randomly. Oh, here's Dr. Gordon. Only took him 6 sequels to arrive. And yeah, obviously Jigsaw, or Hoffman rather, somehow, I don't know how, finds out. And then, yeah, he goes through various traps that all kind of follow the same formula. It's, okay, you've got a minute to save this person. And the person shouts a lot. And then he's like, look, I'm trying to help you. And then he sort of helps them. And then they just die anyway at the end. And the worst thing is, his wife, who has done nothing wrong, that's incidentally, right, he has to do the trap that he said he did, but he didn't actually do. He fails, and then his wife gets killed in what is essentially a giant oven.
Yes, and again, it goes back to the mean-spirited nature. So, when it turns to unfairness, that's not enjoyable.
Yeah. And yeah, the whole film, Jill Tuck, Jigsaw's wife, hiding from Hoffman. And then Hoffman kills about 8 million people to get to Jill Tuck. And then he kills her with the reverse bear trap. So he actually does kill someone finally, I guess. And then, hey, it turns out, you know, Dr. Gordon, he's actually a Jigsaw accomplice as well. Yeah. So he's been helping Jigsaw as well this whole time with any medical shit he had to do. So there's 3 accomplices now.
That we know of.
And there were 2 other, if you remember, because, I don't blame you for not watching this, but when Dr. Gordon turns up at the end of the film, he's got 2 people with him.
I do remember that, yes.
In these pig mask things. Mm. So who knows who those 2 people were? That's not been explained.
Danny Glover.
He's back.
And Mark Wahlberg. Not even Donnie.
Oh, dear. Yeah, definitely not Donnie, because he had his head smashed in the end of Saw 4. That's by far the worst one, I think. As bad as Saw 4 and Saw 5 are, they're just boring. This one is actively bad. Like, everything about it is bad. The way it looks, it's just awful. It's awful. Don't watch it. By Saw 6, they hadn't really... Basically, Paranormal Activity started. And yeah. Paranormal Activity took over as the horror franchise du jour, shall we say. And, people were less interested in Saw. Saw had become a bit passé. Not torture porn, unfortunately. Torture porn was still a thing, but not for much longer.
I'm surprised they never went down the route of trying to turn Saw into a sort of found footage, CCTV-style film. It could work.
Could work, I guess. Who knows?
I'm not saying I want to see that.
Hmm. But not the end of the Saw sequels.
No.
Because there's in more. 2017, we had Jigsaw. Now, this one...
So, hang on. What was the gap then?
So, the gap is 7 years.
Yeah.
So, we had a Saw film every year for 7 years. 7-year gap. And then we get the 8th film, which is Jigsaw, who directed by the Spierig brothers, directed Predestination, a good film, and Winchester, a bad film, among other films, incidentally. So this one is interesting. I already mentioned earlier, I liked the fact, oh my god, it's got a full colour palette. I can actually see different colours. And it looked modern, and there are things about it that were kind of glossy, and I liked the way it looked. And there are things about it that, I thought were an upgrade, shall we say, on what gone before. I mean, God, Saw 3D is pretty low bar to cross. But it just sort of didn't feel that essential. I don't know how you feel about it.
Considering there was such a gap, I'd watched all the other films, and this was like, oh, wow, a new Saw film after so long. I think it defines the term forgettable. I can't remember anything about it at all.
Yeah, I had forgotten so much about it.
I forgot it even existed, actually.
It only
until
came
I
out
it up
4 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'd
completely
forgotten so much
forgettable.
About it. So, did you know? So, essentially, this one is there's another. Guess what? There's another game, everyone, with 5 people in it that seems to take place in like a barn that seems to be taking place in. And it's similar to Saw 5, although a bit better. Incidentally, this is, again, total aside, I think one of the reasons that I think people like Saw is it reminds them of the Crystal Maze.
Yes.
Because that's essentially what it is. It's the Crystal Maze, but just with more death.
Yeah. Maybe the Crystal Maze would be better.
So, instead of Richard O'Brien, you've got Jigsaw.
Yeah.
And this is very Crystal Maze, because you've got essentially 5 people in a room, and if you fail your challenge, instead of getting locked in, you get,
Sawed off,
exactly. And then at the same time, you've got police, because obviously it's a Saw film, it's got police in it, and this guy who's a pathologist and his assistant, his hot assistant, basically, who there, wouldn't you know it, you know, it seems like there's this Saw game, you know, the Jigsaw game happening all over again. And the police detective doesn't like the main character because, you know, he thinks, well, maybe he's doing a, I don't know, for whatever reason. Who knows? Very meh. And then, wouldn't you know it, there's a twist, everybody. Well, there's several twists. First of all, the main game, it was happening 10 years before.
Shocking.
The main story.
Yeah.
So somehow Jigsaw was doing this game. I don't know if it's meant to be before the first film, if it's just after the first film. I don't know. At this point, I think they're just like, you know what, fuck the backstory.
Even Jigsaw's forgotten how much. I think he forgot that was even going on.
And wouldn't you know it, like, the main character, who, this is always a big tell in films like this, whoever the most normal-seeming character is in your film, if there's a twist and it turns out someone is actually a bad person, it's normally the most normal-seeming person. Because there's a character who's set up to be like some kind of, you know, you get people who are like obsessed with serial killers.
Yes.
So there's a character in this who's set up to be like this like John Kramer fanatic who's obsessed, even building their own traps or getting stuff off the internet that apparently he used in his traps. And they're set up as like, oh, maybe it's them. No, it's not them. It's the guy who, you know, has a daughter and seems like a really normal person. He's also a Jigsaw accomplice. So he's had four different accomplices. This whole time. Oh dear. Oh Jesus. So yeah.
So Jigsaw's dead in this one.
Well, he is dead in the modern timeline. In the 10 years earlier timeline, obviously he's alive. And it's got lasers, as you mentioned.
Yeah, oh, I hate that. I hate that. That's very unsaw-like.
Yes. Now, as we already mentioned, you know, there's a new film out called Spiral from the book of Saw.
Yes. Now, I've as of recording of this, I've not seen it. And the fact that you just said it's from the book of Saw makes me think that this is going to be a very loose Saw sort of
is sequel. This going to be, and I've mentioned this before, like one of those Hellraiser sequels?
Or is it going to be a Cloverfield-esque one, you know, like, ooh, Cloverfield Lane, where they mention in one passing sentence something about Jigsaw that happened 5 years ago in a different city? Because if so, I'll be quite annoyed. I'll tell you that right now. I want this to be in the proper Saw universe. If you're going to bring Saw back, I want a proper I'm not saying at the end of the film I want Jigsaw to come back out and like talk to Samuel L. Jackson, but imagine if you did have a scene with Jigsaw and Samuel L. Jackson. That would be amazing.
That would be pretty
but
awesome.
Why is it called from the book of Saw?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know. I haven't seen the film, so we can't tell you. We will find out soon. I'm sure, because, you know, hey, you've seen most of the others in the cinema.
I have to watch.
So, yeah.
I must watch
them. I think this is what, like, series like this kind of thrive on, is that we kind of know that it doesn't really matter how shit the films are. It's like, if you've seen all of them, you're probably going to watch a new one.
I'm invested. I'm too far in now.
Exactly. Even Saw 3D has not put you off.
No, it hasn't. Even having to wear those uncomfortable glasses.
Indeed.
Which pre-COVID you get conjunctivitis from.
Oh, God, yeah. God, imagine what people... What are they going to do about films like that now, where 3D, God?
I don't know. You have to bring your own, I suppose.
Yeah, you have to buy your own, exactly. And then they have to dispose of it afterwards. So, before we end the show,
yes,
I thought it'd be a little bit of fun, as we're talking all things Saw. I know the film we've mostly been talking about, we've said, well, look, the traps aren't really what the film's about. Yeah. I'm going to completely be a massive hypocrite and say, what are some of your favourite traps in the series?
Mm. Okay, well, top three for me.
Okay, let's do
in no
top
particular
three.
Order. The bear trap, or the reverse bear trap, only because, as you said, it actually doesn't kill very many people, just one, in fact.
Just
but
one,
I think
yeah.
that's a very that creation is very iconic for the Saw series, and I really like that as an idea of a trap. So yeah. That would be in my top three. Second one would be the original trap in terms of, I'm going to put in the literal saw from the first film, because I think if you're trying to explain a film to someone and I have to explain, oh, there's this trap where someone's tied up and there's like three saws and then they have to try and wiggle out and there's a dangling pendulum and then they have to, it's too complicated and silly. When you keep it simple, would you hack your leg off to survive? Yeah. That's cool. But actually, for me, the one that sticks in my head the most is not from the first film. It's from the second one, and it's the Pit of Needles.
Right.
And just the idea of, like, I'm not a fan of injections or needles at the best of times, but falling into, being thrown, in fact, into a pit of needles, I think is just horrendous.
Yeah.
So that one really sticks out to me. That would be my sort of top worst trap, I think.
Okay. I would say two of my choices would also be the reverse bear trap, because it's kind of got to be, yeah, really. I also think the pit of needles is probably the worst one because it's the most relatable.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you can't really relate to, I don't know, maybe this is me being horrible. There's certain, most of these traps you can't really relate to because they're not really all that realistic. Like, I don't know, having pigs kind of mashed up and kind of the guts kind of falling on you and it would take you about 10 minutes to drown in them because, you know, it takes a long time. Yeah, stuff like that. It's like, okay, well, that's never going to happen to me at all. But, yeah, everyone has to get injections. Mm. I mean, fuck, look at the world we're living in now. So, yeah, I'd say that one is probably the worst one. And also, weirdly, it's not a trap where basically the person doing the trap doesn't die. It's just so that they can get a key to escape.
Yeah.
So it's a bit less mean-spirited than some of the others. Other than that, I mean, I'm trying to think of other traps that happened. I would say in Saw 6 there are a couple. So I like in Saw 6 the, I don't know what the official name is for them, but where you've got the six people on like a roundabout and there's four bullets.
Oh, yes.
And basically he has to pick two people to save, essentially. I thought that was quite inventive. I also like what's called the mausoleum kind of trap, where it's the guy who's had his eyes sewn shut and the guy who's had his mouth sewn shut. And basically they have to work with a lot of these things. What people don't understand is they actually can get out if they work together, but people panic.
Yeah.
The Chester Bennington trap was funny because it's Chester Bennington. And also it's just so ridiculous. It's like Mark Kermode said that a lot of these, you know, Final Destination, it's like Mousetrap.
Yes.
It's like this happens. And then because of this, this happens. And then because of this, this happens. That trap is kind of one of those where four people die in kind of hilarious ways because of Chester Bennington. And it's therefore because they're racist. So, yeah. Other than that, I mean, I kind of mentioned it. I do think the trap at the end of Saw 5 is quite inventive as well.
The wall one.
Yeah, where there's the giant glass box and Strom thinks, oh, fuck, this is the trap. So he puts Hoffman in the box, thinking he's going to kill him, but he's actually saved Hoffman, and the walls then sort of crush him.
What about the one at the beginning of Saw 3D? I know it's a terrible film, but the one that's out in the open.
Yeah.
I suppose that's a bit on the nose, that one, but it goes back to the morality of Saw, doesn't it? That, two men who are seeing the same woman, the idea being that they either kill each other...
Yeah.
Or they kill her.
The woman. And obviously, they kill the woman because it was that time, everybody. Yeah. You wouldn't be allowed to do
USA.
That now.
Yeah, that's what...
Yeah. Okay, cool. So I think that's a good selection
there.
I think we're on about the similar note. So in terms of James Wan, because the whole point of these kind of three episodes that I'm doing is kind of talk about them. So we already kind of mentioned a little bit about their careers. Now, Saw mentioned it was his first film. After that, in 2007, two films of his came out, which are not that well known. And they're not that well known, I think, because they have very, very similar names. So one is called Dead Silence, and the other one is called Death Sentence.
you said either very quickly, you'd
you
think...
could get...
I don't think I've seen either of those.
So, I've seen Dead Silence. Dead Silence is obviously... Everyone who knows James Wan knows that he has a thing about ventriloquist dummies and puppets. So, that is essentially one of these sort of evil ventriloquist doll films, I think. Or it's been a long time since I've seen it. It's got a twist. The twist is kind of cute, but it's not a great film.
It is currently on Netflix, actually, that film, because it's appeared on my recommended quite a lot of times. Oh, I did not realize it was a James Wan film.
It's so a James Wan film. That. Yeah. And, hey, you know, give it a watch and, you know, make your own mind up. And Death Sentence I have not seen, but is the book based on a book, which is the sequel to Death Wish.
Okay.
Very different. It's got Kevin Bacon in it. Not seen it, so I can't comment on it. But it's one of his least watched films because, after that, every film that he's made has done pretty much massive bank. So we got Insidious. Already great talked film. About it. I think, to be honest, Insidious and The Conjuring, which are kind of his next two films, they fit his sensibilities a bit better. Like, he's good at sort of suspenseful sequences.
Yeah.
And things like that. He's not really a director. Like, Saw is a bit of a weird outlier for him in a way, because he's not really a director that makes gore films, despite the reputation of Saw.
Yeah, there's no real gore in either of those.
He makes jump scare films.
Yeah.
That's what he's good at. So, yeah, so you've got Insidious, you've got The Conjuring, both of the films. Yeah, they're all right. They're good kind of for what they are. The problem I have with them is, you know, Insidious is very kind of jump scare heavy. And The Conjuring, again, is sort of jump scare heavy, not in an obnoxious way. The problem with The Conjuring is I've seen all the films that influence that. So it's, you know, I've seen like The Exorcist and The Changeling and The Haunting and things like that. So I've seen all the films that are massively influenced to it. So, yeah, I'm a bit of an old fogey when it comes to that. But they were really successful. He then made Insidious 2, which is, I think, the only... Yeah, it's the... Oh, it's not the only sequel. So he made Insidious 2, made Conjuring 2. Again, both of which are sort of all right, I guess. Made Fast and the Furious 7, which I already brought up earlier randomly.
That's okay. That's a very strange.
It's very strange, yeah, that he would make a Fast and the Furious film. But he did, and it's one of the more... It's broke $1 billion, so made a lot of
maybe
money.
Maybe he should have made Saw 7.
Yeah, maybe he could have saved it. And his last film he's made is Aquaman, which I've seen. It's boring. It's a DC film. It's like, meh, don't care about those films.
So has he had no hand in any of the other Saw films whatsoever?
So him and Lee, right, so he has been an executive producer on all of the sequels. Lee Whannell co-wrote 2 and he wrote 3.
Okay.
But again, not really, in short.
And what does he have anything coming up, James?
So, his next film is a film called Malignant, which is a totally original film, which, from what I've read up on places like Bloody Disgusting, is meant to be a giallo.
Oh, okay.
So, I'm super curious. It's meant to come out this year. At this point, when you guys are listening to it, who knows, maybe it will have come out by that point. I mean, hey, it's a giallo, so if that is what it is, then I'd be curious to see it.
The world's first horror film about a mole.
Maybe. Evil mole. You know, hey, God, they've had evil shrews, evil mice. God knows.
Malignant.
Malignant, yes.
He likes his one-word film titles.
Yeah, see, that's the key. You know, hey, Dead Silence and Death Sentence.
It didn't do so well. It should have just been called Dead.
Dead and Death, exactly. Yeah. He would have had more joy then. So, you know, Clay, clearly, he's doing very well for himself.
Yes.
And it all started with Saw, a film, as we said, made for less than $1 million. So look, you know, hey, look how far he's come in like the last 17 years.
So I'm guessing that would be his most profitable in terms of budget to... outcome.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I don't know. It depends how much the Fast and the Furious films cost. I mean, fuck, they must cost a certain amount of money. But yeah, no, I know what you're saying.
A lot of baby oil spent on that film.
A lot of testosterone, really. And so that is the end of the episode. So we've gone all things Saw. It's been an interesting experience watching all the Saw films again, especially the first one, because it's not one I've seen it obviously quite a few times, but it's not one I've seen for a long time. And yeah, you said
It's been enjoyable for me to go back and watch it, because I think I've got a newfound appreciation for it now. Definitely.
Yeah, definitely watch Saw. Watch Saw 2 if you want to. It's enjoyable. Maybe don't watch any of the others. I think 6 is kind of fun in a shit kind of way, but you don't really need to watch them.
If we're talking about date movies, if you're going on a date with someone and you recommend that you watch Saw 6, be prepared that may be the only
that
date.
That might be the end. So there you go. Although Saw is not a bad date movie, Saw 3 definitely is. Saw 7 definitely is. And if you're at that point, then you're not doing well.
No.
And on that note, I am happy to thank Tom once again for coming
Always
on the
a
show.
Pleasure.
All right. We'll have to have you on again at some point. And my name's Greg Knox. And I look forward to doing the next show where we will be talking about Hostel and Eli Roth. And I thank you very much. Thank you for listening. If you want to follow me on social media, you can at Worst Date Movies Ever. And don't forget to click subscribe wherever you're listening to this right now to never miss another episode of Worst Date Movies Ever.